Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, someone I'm looking forward to speaking to again. Last time she was on the show, it was a wealth of information. And our houses and our offices are places that we really don't think about. And they're so important to our health. Daily, I talk to patients who are now coming in with various elements like ringing in the ear and hearing loss. And the first thing I now ask them is, what's their use of routers and 5G and all sorts of EMF exposure? Because I think that's the, I think it's the underpinning of health in the future. So today we're going to speak with, again, with Ms. Kathy Cook. She's been working as an integrative health coach since 2014. She's also a board certified holistic nutritionist with the National Association of Nutritional Professionals. Recognizing that many of her clients were doing everything right, yet still suffering from health issues, she realized that many home and work environments were contributing to the illness. And part of our conversation today is, I think it's going to be right in your wheelhouse. So I want to start off, one, by welcoming you back to the show, because it was a wealth of information and education for me last time you came on.
Yeah, well, thanks, Dr. George. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and especially with providers that are really getting to the root cause of problems. So it's a pleasure to talk again.
Well, thank you. Let's start off the conversation with, what is EMF? I mentioned it to patients and they have a deer in a headlight look in their eyes, because I don't think we talk much about it, but we're using it all the time, aren't we?
Yeah, same with me when I'm in clients' homes for, say, mold or air quality issues, and I mention EMF because I see something that catches my eye, they're often a little confused. So since the advent of electricity, really, we've been surrounding ourselves with electromagnetic fields. And so most of us think of our cell phones or our Wi-Fi or that 5G cell tower. That's what we think of when we hear the term EMF. But it's much bigger than that. It's actually the electricity that's flowing through our walls because of current or electric fields or dirty electricity that also impacts us. And it can be quite significant. When we reduce these fields in people's homes, we often see dramatic symptom relief from many different things. So it's much more ubiquitous than most of us think, and we're pretty much surrounding ourselves in it all the time.
Now, from a cellular and a biological standpoint, why does EMF affect us? Is it because we're also electromagnetic, like our heart, right? The when you do a electrocardiogram, that's what it's measuring. Are we so sensitive because basically it's messing with our own rhythm?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So a lot of the theories of what's going on comes from many different researchers, but particularly I like the work of Dr. Martin Paul, who's a professor emeritus from Washington State University. And what he found in his research is a lot of impact on the voltage-gated calcium channels. So just like you're saying, our body communicates via electrical signals, and a lot of our cells will have abundant calcium on the outside, which is tightly regulated by these voltage gates. But when we're in the presence of these human-made fields that are not native to our bodies, and you know, this whole new source of electromagnetism, then the voltage gates can get artificially open and stuck open. And then we can get this flood of calcium ions into the cell, which can ultimately lead to oxidative stress. And then symptoms or pathology can happen from that oxidative stress, and it can be very different depending on the person. So that's one way that it can impact us. And then other researchers are looking at how it impacts the blood-brain barrier, can cause DNA breaks. It has a mild antibiotic effect. So imagine all those great, beautiful bacteria in your gut that, you know, might be killed from exposure. So it's multifactorial, and the research is really still developing. So we might find a lot more.
That's fascinating that so many systems can be affected. And, you know, what strikes me as a physician is that these are ailments that are so general, you know, fatigue or brain fog or headaches. And then people go down this pathway of workup and God knows what happens, medication and interventions, when I think we need to go back to something simple. And the more I learn about it, I think I'm becoming a much better clinician, and patients are getting the problem fixed instead of being on a medicine to fix a side effect of another medicine, but they're still not better. I think you've done a wonderful job of setting up the underpinning for why people get ill. So I want to talk about solutions and start off earlier in the show with what can we do to protect ourselves from EMF? I think probably one of them would be don't have it, but that's not really feasible in this day and age. But what are some strategies? Like, what do you recommend first that people do to figure out if they're in a cloud of this?
Yeah.
And then how can they protect themselves?
Yeah. And I love this question because there are so many things we can do. And one of the main pushbacks that I get from people is, well, it's everywhere, so why even bother? And while it is more abundant than it ever has been before, that does not mean that we can't make dramatic changes to our environment. So your proximity is what's important. So just because your neighbor has a router, a Wi-Fi router in their home, you're not getting nearly as much from that router as the router in your own house, because usually you're closer to it. So it is very important that we consider what's in our own house, and so that we can mitigate these exposures, because that's the most important thing. And I tell people, hands down, if you're going to reduce the EMF exposure in your home, the biggest thing you can do is hardwire your internet. And I know that there's a lot of reasons that people don't necessarily want to do that. Maybe they're overwhelmed. They don't understand how things will still function if they don't have Wi-Fi. But you can get an Ethernet cord from your router to your computer, your TV, sometimes your security system, your phone, even whatever. Like, I'm talking to you right now through my computer. I do not have Wi-Fi in the house. There is a TV that streams Netflix and, you know, other channels. It is wired. So there's no Wi-Fi in this house, but I can use my phone. I can use all my gadgets just the same. It's just that I have a wire to it. And some people feel that that wire might be inconvenient, but I tell you what, it's a lot more inconvenient to go through, you know, doctor visits constantly, all of the crazy, you know, very expensive functional lab tests that we do, you know, the blood draws. Like, that's all way more inconvenient to me than just having a wire to my phone or my computer. So that's the biggest thing. And, you know, other things that we can do to reduce our exposure from the wires running in our walls and these kinds of things takes a little bit more nuance to identify where some of these issues are coming from. But if you can just be aware of where you're spending time, am I sitting next to, you know, my lamp that's plugged in the outlet right behind me? Okay, well, let's get a little bit of distance from that outlet. You know, am I sleeping on a bed that plugs in? Wow, your fields are probably pretty high. Okay, adjust the bed and then unplug it. You know, so some of these things can be pretty simple. We just have to start with a little bit of awareness to look at what's around us and make some simple changes.
Well, the first question I would ask is, how far do you have to be from the source?
Well, that's a great question. And it depends on what the source is. So, you know, a lot of people want to ask me, how close can I live to a cell tower? Or how far away do I need to live from a cell tower? And there's really no good answer for that, because they're all different. You know, one cell tower might have four antennas on it, and the next one might have 20, And the power output from those antennas can all be different, and the way that they're angled towards your house is different. So many different variables. And so we don't have an easy number to say, oh, a mile is good or 2 miles is good. You know, there's also trees and buildings in between you and the cell tower that might be blocking that signal. So for those kinds of situations, I recommend that people have a meter and test to see what they're dealing with. But for the devices that we would find inside our home, something like a Wi-Fi router, or even our phone, you know, the real answer is the more distance you can get, the better. So we have something called the inverse square law in radio frequency and physics that will tell us that, you know, each small distance that we are removed or away from the device, the field reduction goes down exponentially. So yeah, so there's no real answer to that, especially because some of us are going to react with lower exposures where others, more sensitive people, will react when our exposure is, you know, at an even further distance. So our body's own, you know, how it deals with these exposures is very different too. So ultimately, the more distance we can get, the better.
Great answer. And at night, I assume it's the same thing. People have this habit of taking their phone and putting it at their bedside because they want to, you know, have their alarm work, or they want to be sure they don't miss a call. Is there any value to putting it on airplane mode and turning off the other antennas like Bluetooth or the cellular?
I mean, I certainly think so. You know, I do have a cell phone and it is on airplane mode with the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi off 99% of the time. I will turn it on a couple times a day to check messages or maybe get directions. And a great tip that most people don't know is you can download the directions and then put your phone in airplane mode, and those directions will still carry you to where you need to go. Yeah, it's great. So it's just using the GPS. It just has to make that connection, and then it's in airplane mode the rest of the time. So that's how I use my phone. I fully realize that not everybody can do that. You know, you're a doctor. You probably need to get, you know, more urgent calls. People have children, aging parents, whatever. But if it does need to be on, first of all, you can, you know, distance again. So have it on the other side of the room, not right next to you. And do you need to have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and your cellular data on all the time, all three of them? Most of us don't. So if you need to get a phone call, great. Put it on the other side of the room, turn the Wi-Fi off, turn the Bluetooth off. That's going to dramatically reduce your exposure. And that distance makes a really big deal. So that's typically the kind of thing I would expect or suggest to my clients. And even better, what I use is a Google Voice number that's through my hardwired computer. So anybody can call me any time of the day if my computer is on and the app is open. And so anybody can reach me just, you know, by calling my Google Voice number, and I don't have to worry about the radio frequency.
So what I'm reading from what you just said is if you have to pick an antenna, you want it never to, if you can help it, never to be the Bluetooth or the Wi-Fi, but the cellular would be, if you have to pick one, the safest choice?
Generally speaking, yes. Now, all phones are different and there's variables, so it is always best to test. But the benefit to having the cellular data on is that if it is dormant, in other words, I'm not streaming anything, I'm not making a call, it's just sitting here next to me waiting for a call, it is not usually giving off, you know, a steady stream of radio frequency because it's just going to connect to the tower every, I don't know, 30 seconds or so to make sure, hey, yeah, I'm still connected. And it'll give out a little burst then. But if you have the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth on, they have a consistent outpouring of this radio frequency because it's wanting to, you know, be active all the time and it's connecting to the devices. So in my testing experience, the cellular data tends to be the lowest if you're just, you know, you have it here because you might get a call or something.
Got it. That makes sense. On that note, let's take our first break because I want to delve into, we talked about our devices. I want to get into the home next. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Miss Kathy Cook, and you can go to her website, wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. Right? Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And before the break, you were doing a wonderful job of telling us what we have in our hands and on our laps and how safe we need to be with them. And I want to segue before I talk about the home, about our laptops, especially where we put them. Is there, I mean, it shouldn't have, from what you're describing, you should not be having them on your lap. Is that correct?
I do not recommend it. No. Yeah. Not anywhere on your body.
Is there a shielding then that you can recommend? I've seen some sort of platforms you can put them on, or laptop, or buy something to try to mitigate that. Are those worth any money?
They do work. If for somebody that is going to put it on their lap, you know, they're going to sit there with it on their legs, on their lap, on their abdomen. I mean, I've got plenty of clients whose children, for example, there's just no way around it. That's just what they're going to do. In that situation, they can be helpful. It's not going to really reduce, you know, what your torso and your head is getting from the radio frequency, but it's that magnetic and electric field that can be on the laptop that those pads can actually help to reduce to some degree. So if that's going to happen, I do recommend them.
Okay. And is there value in limiting their access? I mean, we got the video games going and all these things you handheld and play with. Is there a value in parents limiting the time? Because children are a lot more sensitive than we are, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that developing brain, those thinner skulls. I think so. I mean, you know, I think it's a very valuable tool to limit time to the screens. I realize that's a big challenge, you know, and it's a difficult thing to do in many situations. But if that is something that parents are willing to do, I would highly recommend it for sure.
And I assume also we can go lower with the little children with those little holders on their, I guess their little playpens or whatever that hold the iPad. Mm. Probably not a good idea either.
Oh, I would prefer our, you know, old school tactile, you know, toys or distractions or you know, mobiles or whatever it is. I would much prefer those. It'd be a much safer option for sure.
Got you. So now that we've talked about our device, let's talk about the home, because, you know, I've had patients tell me they have smart homes and I just kind of cringe when I hear that word. But what's your first thought when you hear that statement, a smart home?
Oh, boy. I cringe as well. Yeah, it is a tough one. And when I walk into a smart home and I'm doing an EMF analysis, if, you know, all the things are connected, we've got the refrigerator, we've got the furnace, the thermostat, you know, everything is connected. It's almost impossible to even do the assessment because it's just a cloud of electrosmog coming from everywhere. You know, usually I can go on and say, oh, okay, here's your source. Let's hardwire this. Let's mitigate this. Let's put some shielding cloth on it. Let's move it to the other side of the room. You know, whatever. There's multiple different mitigation strategies. But when everything is connected, it's almost impossible. And it's scary to me, especially when there are young children in the home, because we just don't know what that's going to do to their development over the years. And, you know, I personally don't think that it's a coincidence that many of our younger children are having more and more behavior challenges, mood challenges, memory, learning, even social skills. You know, in my world, I think that there is a direct connection, and I would really like to eliminate some of these smart appliances and smart home systems because I just don't think it's a good idea.
I mean, can you imagine the, well, you've seen it too, I'm sure, all these behavioral issues, ADHD, these diagnoses that popped up pretty much in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. I wonder, and from what you just described, how much of that is from the environment that the children are living in? And we didn't have cell phones when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Have them as toddlers, play with them and be just, it's, they're like a third arm to these kids. I wonder if we could clear that, if we would see a decrease in that, you know, maybe there's no answer to this question, but it does make you think, if you would just get this out of their environment, go back to, you have to touch things, you have to write things, you have to be mm-hmm. tactile, you have to actually work out a problem, that maybe we would have a decrease in this.
I feel pretty confident it would. I'm not saying this is the only issue, you know, the only contributor. Of course, we live in a wild time right now with all kinds of different exposures and stressors, but I feel pretty confident in that. And I say that mostly because I saw it in myself. It was very clear. I used to get, when I would work on my laptop and I'd put it on my lap and I would have Wi-Fi because, you know, 15 years ago, I didn't know all this. And I would get so irritable. I would get memory loss and brain fog. And it was like, you know, it was about 20, 30 minutes in and I just could not function. But once I hardwired, I was like, oh, I don't have any of that. And it was so clear. And I have seen some similar results with clients that have gone to hardwiring. So, you know, I feel pretty confident that it would at least support the body to be a little bit more resilient.
So in your experience, and again, on average, because I know you can't give me specifics, but how long does it take for the brain fog and these symptoms to clear?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, for me, if I get into a situation where I'm exposed for, you know, like, let's say that laptop for 20, 30 minutes, it'll take me a couple hours. And then I'll start to kind of return to normal. Everybody's different, but it can, I mean, for me, I feel like that's a pretty quick, dissipation. I mean, I wish it was shorter, but on the grand scheme of things, you know, if we're dealing with a major infection or a mold exposure or, you know, candida or whatever, like that's going to take us months versus if we get out of the EMF fields. Sometimes, you know, I can resolve that in a couple of hours. Some people, it's a day. Some people, if they get really hit and they're very sensitive, it might take them a couple of days. But that will start to resolve. And most people can notice a difference pretty quickly.
That's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But do you imagine how much the people are inundated because it's a 24-hour exposure, right? You're sitting at your desk. You're using it at work. You listen to music and you work out with the Bluetooth in your ears. Mm-hmm. You go to sleep with the bed with the phone at your bedside. No wonder people are having all these issues from sleeping. I would think it messes with your sleeping pattern, to all the brain fog and younger people who have to write things down because they can't remember. I hear this every mm-hmm. day now. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about sleep though, because that's one of the major ways that we detox. Is this, if you do keep this close to you, is it messing with your sleep patterns, with your sleep hygiene?
Absolutely. And so that is how I got into this field, because for me, I suffered with really severe insomnia for 15 or so years. And this, I mean, I was researching everything I could get my hands on and doing all the things, but I just couldn't get it to resolve. And it wasn't until about 10 years in that I discovered EMF, of which I thought was kind of woo-woo. But once I started to reduce the fields, within a couple of days, my sleep started to return. And it was shocking to me. And I, you know, that experience being so dramatic, I said, okay, I have to know everything there is to know about this. And so I started to, you know, learn at the Building Biology Institute. And so most people, if I can just get them to get the phone out of the room, most people will sheepishly admit, yeah, I think I slept a little better. You know, they don't always want to admit it, but I absolutely think so. And, you know, not only is it the phone, but for me, I actually turn my breaker off at night so I can reduce that electric field in the house because, you know, those electric fields running behind the bed. I definitely think that it can, in various ways, you know, depending on the person, interrupt the sleep pattern. And usually what I'll see with people that track their sleep, hopefully they're doing that with an Oura Ring because you can actually put that in airplane mode. So you're not getting any EMF exposure from the wearable. I will see their deep sleep increase once they start this mitigation. So it's, you know, it's pretty scientific when I'm looking at people's sleep data, when they've got, you know, the devices in their room and they've got the breaker on versus when they turn the breaker off and the phone is out of the room. It's pretty clear. So yeah, I think there's a very strong connection.
And you mentioned a few times shielding. I mean, let's segue into things that you can do actively. Mm-hmm. You know, like if let's say you can't turn it off and you have to have it, does it work, I should say, to put a shield on your router? Is that worth it?
Absolutely. So there's two different types of products that combat or so-called combat the EMF in our homes. And one of those would be harmonizers, which are things like chips and pendants, necklaces, you know, something that you plug into your house and it's supposed to harmonize all the fields so that now they're biocompatible with your body. I don't usually recommend those because there's not a lot of science to show us that they're helping. The shielding, however, is all physics. So the cloth usually has silver or copper or some kind of metal that will actually block the radio frequency. So if you do have Wi-Fi in the house and you shield it in some shielding cloth, I will see a 95% reduction in the radio frequency just from doing that, which is pretty dramatic. The challenge is, you know, we have to make sure that your devices are still connecting if you're still using your devices. And so there's different ways to mitigate that. But the actual physical shielding absolutely works. And when used properly, it can be extremely helpful.
So from the beginning of our conversation, you talked about using Ethernet, right? Or mm-hmm. wiring it. Wouldn't that you can shield and still wire because it's not about that signal, correct?
Exactly. I'm really glad you mentioned that. That's such a great point because a lot of people think it's all or nothing and it's not. So let's say, you know, you need the Wi-Fi for your security system. You could hardwire the security system, but you've got one installed already. It's working. You're not going to mess with it. That's what I hear a lot from clients. Okay. You've got your Wi-Fi. It's connecting to your security system. Awesome. Let's still get an Ethernet cord to your computer because that way we can turn the Wi-Fi off on the computer. So when you're sitting in front of it, you're going to have this, you know, again, maybe 90, 95% reduction. Awesome. That's, you know, that's a win-win. I think that is a great solution. And there's also a quote unquote low EMF router you can buy that pulses at 90% less frequency. So if you have to have the Wi-Fi on, it's a better option so that you've got less of these damaging radio frequency pulses that are coming at you 24/7.
That's awesome. So we're talking about, you know, not everybody, but most people have their cable TV or, you know, they get a router from Comcast or Xfinity, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a router would it be compatible with that signal or you're talking about a separate router?
It's usually a separate router. And so the majority of the time you buy the router and then you hook it into the modem from your internet provider. And 95% of the time that works, but you bring up a good point. So these days, sometimes the internet providers are kind of changing things and saying, no, it's our router or nothing. So it's a good idea to confirm that you can have your own router. Generally, it's not a problem. And if that is the case, you might be able to change your internet provider so you can get this router. That would be preferred. Usually it's not a problem, but it is important to check to make sure.
That's a good point. I mean, at this point, we don't even realize how much power we have in controlling what happens with us, right? I mean, if you really want to be proactive, I think you really have to be aggressive and consistent. And I think you really have to be in a mindset of, I love myself. I'm not going to put myself in harm's way for anybody. And once you have that mentality, you start having a different approach to things. And it's wonderful just to speak with you, because as a building biologist and a nutritionist, you have so much ammunition that you can bestow, you know, on us, so that we can take what works and or not, you know, make it work for whatever we need. But at least we'll be moving in the right direction to help ourselves. And I think that's where everybody should be. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And you teach as well. You have courses that you also, that people can join as students. Am I correct?
Yeah. I've got several courses. I've got like a basic testing course, which will kind of walk you through how to use different meters for EMF and how to understand what those readings mean that you're getting in your house. I have a sleep course, you know, since I'm so passionate about the topic of sleep, because I dealt with it for so long. I have a sleep course that walks you through the foundations of how to make sure that you're getting adequate sleep, from balancing blood sugar to circadian rhythm, reducing the EMF, of course, looking at your air quality, all that great stuff. And then I have a course on flying. So it's called Fly Healthier to Feel Better. And it's mostly about EMF. And since there's, you know, I've got a lot of clients that could not get on an airplane because the EMF is just too extreme and they just couldn't do it. So this course is about, you know, maybe not for that extreme population. I'm not going to try to say that this course can solve their problems, but for the rest of us who feel gross and yucky when we fly, it's all about what you can do to mitigate those exposures. And then I've got a course on mold remediation, because most remediation is not done well. And so it is, if you have to go through a remediation, this is exactly how it should be done. And this is what you tell your remediation company to do.
Wow. That last one is right in my wheelhouse. I actually had a conversation with a patient today about a mold exposure. And she had a traumatic brain injury and other neurological issues. And she mentioned that after she discovered that she was living in mold, she realized that over the time that she'd been there, like it was almost a year, her symptoms got dramatically worse. And I want to, you know, I think, you know, I live in the Southeast, and anybody in the South, it's just moisture. They make these, I think there's some sort of, isn't it like a sugar component to the walls, what they put in to the walls? And so it's like it feeds fungus or feeds mold.
Yeah. Sometimes there's adhesive, you know, paper, any, you know, mold exists mostly to decompose and decompose wood, you know, but if you're in a forest and you see a tree fallen, that tree could have been there for many, many years, because it's a very slow decomposition, because mold doesn't have teeth. It can't just eat it, but it releases enzymes, which is a very slow process. But if you've got paper, which is pre-digested, which to us would be like, you know, a piece of fruit versus table sugar. Oh, you know, we're going to digest that table sugar super fast. And the mold will do the same thing on the paper, because it's this beautiful pre-digested, I'm just going to go crazy, and it's going to multiply very, very rapidly on the paper. And then if we've got adhesives in there with different you know, sugar contents as well, yes, it's just going to feed that growth. And it's so that's why, you know, mold in buildings is a lot bigger of a problem than it is outdoors.
Absolutely. And I've had patients and people tell me that, you know, if they live in an apartment, for example, I think that's the worst place to live, because they just paint it over. They tell you they've done a remediation, but in actuality, they've just painted it.
Yep.
You know, I've had people say that the mold comes back through the paint.
That's a bad situation.
Oh my gosh. So I know it's going to be, it's a big topic, but what do you recommend in terms of because people don't know. Anybody can say they're remediation, like you said, but they can be totally jacking you around. What are you looking for so people can ask the right questions and know that they're not getting hosed?
Yes. So you want to ask if they follow any standard. They should tell you they follow this IICRC S520 standard. Those are the standards for the remediation world. However, if they tell you that, it doesn't mean they actually do follow them. Most of them don't, but they should definitely follow the standards. And then you want to know one basic thing. What is their main treatment? Are they spraying it with a chemical, or are they going to do actual removal? That is the big difference. So, you know, in the industry, there's a saying that mold is gold, because if you can get into a situation and spray an antifungal on a, you know, some studs or subfloor or whatever it is, and then leave, you've just made a ton of money with very little work. And that's what most of them do. What you are supposed to do and what the standards tell you to do is physically remove the building materials, or to abrasively sand or blast or brush the mold off of the building materials while HEPA vacuuming. Those are the two big differences. If they remove it, awesome. If they spray it, not good.
That's good to know. And a lot of people have mentioned that, you know, that they didn't. I always ask, did they remove the wall? Did they clean it? Did they actually remove the actual source? And a lot of times I don't hear that.
Right. And
that's where, again, what you do is so powerful, because you don't have a dog in the hunt. Your job is to get everybody in a position where they're living in a healthy environment. That's the whole point of a building biologist, right?
Yeah. And you know, I'm so passionate about it, because it's heartbreaking to me what my clients go through. And, you know, I was bit by a tick when I was 12 and went through all the craziness for decades because nobody could understand what was going on with me. And it was traumatic. And I don't want anybody else to have to get stuck in the system when they don't have answers and they're gaslit by their healthcare providers and their remediation companies and their builders. It really fires me up, because this is preventable, it's unnecessary, and we can fix it. We just need the people, you know, people with integrity to actually do the work. So that's why I'm so passionate about fighting for my clients, because this can be solved if they just have the right team. So yeah, it's very important to me.
I can feel that. So from the standpoint, and you have such a unique skill set, because you're also a nutritionist. So we're talking now, we have talked about the outside, but do we have tools? You know, if we eat right, is our body able to ward some of this stuff off or detox us in some way?
Yeah, I also love this question. It's so good, because there's a lot we can do. You know, when I was talking about the voltage-gated calcium channels and this oxidative stress, most of us have heard of antioxidants, and we know that antioxidants can combat oxidation or oxidative stress. So great. If we're eating a diet that has a lot of antioxidants, that's one thing we can do to help mitigate some of that oxidative stress from the EMF exposure. I'm a big fan of rosemary and rosmarinic acid. There's actually a decent amount of research showing that rosmarinic acid from things like rosemary is very radioprotective. So I, you know, for my most sensitive clients, I typically have them take rosemary tincture a couple times a day, you know, throw it in their cooking. You know, rosemary adds flavor to practically any dish. It's great. So spices can be super helpful. You know, most spices have high antioxidant value. I'm also a huge fan of magnesium. Magnesium is kind of the ultimate calcium channel blocker. So if we are exposed to these fields in high amounts, I make sure that magnesium is on board a lot. And, you know, you can get magnesium in certain foods. Sometimes, you know, due to this, our soil quality, maybe it's not as easy as it used to be. So a magnesium supplement can be helpful. Then I also like to do things like hydrogen water. That's one of my favorites. You can buy hydrogen water bottles these days, and that can be great to combat some of this oxidative stress as well. And then, like you said, working on detox, especially if you've had, you know, mold exposure, supporting the liver with things like milk thistle or dandelion. Most of my clients, I try to have them use glutathione. Some people can't tolerate it, but if you can, I think glutathione is amazing because it's going to help, with that liver support. Vitamin C is important. You know, you can get vitamin C in a lot of your foods. So there's so many things we can do, you know, eating the rainbow, eating, nutrient dense, diverse diet. You know, some of us need a little fine tuning because maybe we don't do good with oxalates or, you know, high levels of carb or whatever it is we want to fine tune. But just, you know, it really comes back to the basics of just eating real food. You know, don't eat packaged foods, just keep it real and high antioxidant value. That's generally where I start.
I think that's great advice for just general health. I mean, if we would do this more often instead of this artificial nonsense with all sorts of junk in it. It's amazing how our bodies are able to help us despite what we do to them.
That's right.
About it. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Miss Kathy Cook. And again, you can go to her website. Well, there's buildingbiologyinstitute.org. That's where people can find your courses and also contact you, because you do also have a consulting service, right?
I do, yes.
And do people have to live in your state, or can you do consults outside of it?
Yeah, I do quite a bit of consulting all over the country, all over the world, really. You don't have to be in Idaho, where I'm at. And I do travel for in-home inspections as well. Of course, most of my work is here in Idaho, but yeah, I consult with people all over the world often.
That's good to know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd be curious, if you're building a house, right? Do you consult for people who are in the process of building so they cannot make mistakes from the ground up?
Absolutely. If that is one of the best things you can do. I do have a lot of consulting clients that I help walk through the build process to make sure we're putting all of these, you know, best practices and prevention strategies in place so that you don't find yourself in a situation where you've got high EMF or mold. So, that's the easiest way to do it when it's being built. So yes, if somebody is fortunate enough to be building from the ground up, excellent place to get a building biologist involved so we can help you make those decisions to creating the healthiest house you can possibly have.
And I would think it goes even down to what ventilation and what HVAC system you pick. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, really it starts with the site, you know, what the site selection, like where's the lot, you know, are you going to get a lot that is close to a substation or agriculture or a dry cleaner, you know, like it starts from the very foundation of where are we going to put that house? And then is it next to a hill? You know, do we have good drainage? You know, we will always want to build our houses elevated so that we have a slope in all directions so that the water drains away from the house. So let's not build into the side of a hill. You know, and then are you going to have a crawl space? What's your ventilation system? Are we going to have HVAC system here? Can we do without it? Because when we can do without an HVAC system, that's amazing for air quality. Are we going to screen the house because we want to prevent, you know, is there going to be potentially a future cell tower that goes in nearby? Well, let's be preemptive and, you know, shield the house as it's being built, because it's really easy to do that at that point. So many things to talk about. So yeah, it starts from the very, very foundation of where are we actually even going to put the house.
I mean, it's so much empowerment in being able to protect yourself mm-hmm. in a way that is, it's not this half-baked thing that you're talking about from, even if it's built, being able to make your house your fortress, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. I try, you know, I do a lot of things in my home, try to mitigate, like plugging in, like, I think, I forget what it's called. It's a filter that goes into the plug in the wall. And so it's supposed to harmonize the dirty electricity or stop the dirty electricity that comes out. And the first thing I noticed is that my electricity bill went down. It was really awesome. It's a great side effect.
Yeah.
And then I got this shielding. It's like a clear plat. It looks, it's not plastic, but you put it up like wallpaper, but it's supposed to stop EMF from coming in. And the first thing I noticed is that I felt calmer. Mm. The room felt like a sanctuary than before I had it up. And correct me if I'm wrong. Is that a strategy in your opinion that's worth doing it? Worth doing?
Yeah, for sure. And that is the common, experience that most of us have. Like if we turn off the breakers in the house while we're testing, most of the time people say, oh, it feels calmer. It's just this sense of, you know, like the weight has been lifted off that you didn't even know was there. So yeah, it sounds like you've had a similar experience with the shielding. And yeah, so it sounds like you're probably using a dirty electricity filter, like a Green Wave or a Stetzer filter. Yep. Those are great when they're used properly. They can definitely reduce these, you know, crazy sine waves that are riding on the wires. And then the film that you use, the shielding material, absolutely. That goes back to physics where it's going to, you know, deflect something that's coming into the house that we don't want. And that's great. So you had this feeling of calm. That's exactly what we want to see.
Excellent. And, you know, we all, not all of us, but we have pets and we want to protect them as well. Are they as sensitive, in your opinion, to what these EMFs? I mean, they're water-based too, like we are. They have cells. So I would think that they might be just as sensitive. They just can't tell us.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've got a client in Connecticut right now who has been going through quite a process because they found some elevated magnetic fields in their home from current on their water pipes. And they have a new puppy and this came on suddenly from a change in the environment. And she would tell me that the puppy was having, you know, a lot of behavior issues, appeared to be in pain, was not doing well. Thankfully they got the situation fixed. They put in a dielectric union on the water pipes and they said the puppy behavior returned to normal. You know, seemingly was out of pain and was just a completely different dog. So yeah, absolutely. I definitely think so. And you know, why are our pets getting cancer? I mean, I'm sure it's multifactorial again, but I am willing to bet that has an influence for sure.
I mean, it would make sense that it would if you're describing this, oxidative stress. I mean, that is the genesis of pretty much all disease. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the things that you describe, like the hydrogen water and the supplements to I guess neutralize these things, then it's just a matter of time before something pops up. Now, right. I know you also do nutritional consultations, so I wanted to touch base with that because I think that is such, again, value added what you're doing, because you can take care of the house and the person and everything in between, which is really great. One-stop shop, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't intend to do both and it's a lot to keep up with. But for me, you know, I was working as a nutritionist and then had my own experience and then realized, in hindsight, I could see, oh, you know, this client who I've been trying to help with, you know, whatever symptom, now I can make the connection. I think it's an air quality issue, or I think it's an EMF issue. So it just, if we're going to treat the whole person, you know, I realized you got to do both. You got to, you know, in building biology, we say that your home is your third skin. So you got to treat all the skins, right? You got to treat the body, and you got to treat the environment as well. Otherwise, we're missing huge chunks of, you know, healing and, you know, minimizing whatever it is that is keeping the person in this, you know, diseased state, so to speak. So yeah, I feel fortunate that I do both, so I can really help my clients put the pieces together sometimes. Because maybe it's not that food you're eating, you know, maybe it is the air quality or vice versa. Sometimes people swear to me up and down it's mold or, you know, whatever it is. But if we can make, you know, do some functional lab testing and we go, oh, actually looks like you have an oxalate issue, you know, let's address that. So it's a lot to take in, but I do feel very blessed that I can do both because it can really speed up the healing process for a lot of people.
I mean, it's a much better way to go about it than masking it with some medication that doesn't do anything. I mean, I just watch these commercials on TV, especially around the news, unfortunately. And it's just a wall-to-wall infomercial for whatever pharmaceutical they want to come up with. And you notice that they don't really, you got to do it forever, once a day. And I'm seeing more and more side effects of death, depression. I mean, things are like, wait a minute, why is this on the market and it can kill you? And you're on a depression medicine that makes you suicidal. I don't, could it be me? But I think that's wrong. So
I agree.
All right. I know we have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to touch base quickly with, there's an indoor air quality assessment that you do. And you mentioned about temperature and humidity. Does that, I mean, I can understand humidity with mold, right? But what about temperature? How can that affect?
Well, so it's interesting. Temperature is directly related to our humidity. So, you know, where you are, you may see that when you're in the heat of the summer or this year, you're, you know, in 2024, maybe more than the summer, spring and fall as well, your temperature is elevated. And so you turn on the air conditioning and you will see the humidity drop because warm air can hold more moisture. So if we have the air conditioning on and we lower that temperature, we're helping to regulate our humidity levels so that they don't get too high. Because when the humidity gets too high, you've got more water, you can have condensation, and then you get microbial growth, you get mold growth. So the temperature is super important to make sure that we keep it in a range where mold is not going to grow and we don't get condensation. So, you know, mold loves warmer temperatures and it must have water. So keeping the temperature cooler will help to prevent that microbial growth. And it's also connected to, you know, humidity more so connected to viruses and respiratory health. You know, we don't want our conditions too dry either. We can get sinus issues. We're more likely to get viral or, you know, other microbes that can also lead to poor health. So it's just this, it's a really fascinating building science where everything kind of interplays and connects. And so we're hoping to get that optimal level of humidity and temperature, as well as dew point, which is in the mix as well. But you know, that's why most of us, you know, we keep our houses around 70 degrees. That's not only where we feel comfortable, but it's not great for the microbes either.
Sounds great. You know, time goes way too fast, but I want to make sure people know how to reach you and, you know, use your services.
Yeah. So, anybody can reach me at, my website, which is Whole Home and Body Health. I do have an Instagram page that I post on regularly, which is mostly me on inspections. So I love to just give really brief tips about how to look at your house, what I'm looking for when I'm doing an inspection, you know, things to look at in your attic or in your crawl space or how to use a moisture meter. So that's a great place to follow me as well so that you can pick up on tips of what you can do in your house. And then I have a YouTube channel as well, where I show in a little bit more depth of some of the things I'm finding inside homes as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And it was, again, a wealth of information. and a call to action. There's more things that I know I can do to help myself and my patients. So I want to thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.